Welcome back to Therapy Insiders Podcast, part of the UpDoc Media family. So it is summertime and a lot of cool things are happening. Get to go outside, get to have some fun. And a lot of you, if you are listeners that are in physical therapy school or chiropractic school, are graduating. It's graduation time. Dads and grad sales, they're everywhere, right? All you have to do is turn the TV on or open up a website and you'll see it's dads and grads. So if you have a dad coming up, you're in luck, get him a Father's Day gift. Or if you're a grad, you've got a lot of other cool stuff to look forward to. We obviously discuss and cover a lot of topics related to healthcare students, physical therapy in particular, and we do a lot of different events and talks and similar things. Jeff Moore and I do a mentorship group that we discuss in this podcast, but it all amounts to advice. We mentor, we answer questions, we get emails and tweets, and we kind of have this list of our most commonly asked questions. So we wanted to do a podcast and give our best advice, things that we hear often, to help start your career on the right foot. So here it is. Enjoy. Therapy Insiders is sponsored by Ascend Business Summit, the ultimate business summit for rehab therapists. Now, you can't have an awesome business summit without giving away an awesome award, right? Just wouldn't work. So has your practice been achieving some incredible business results this year? Have you been really doing incredible, innovative, accomplished things at your practice? Then share your success story. Enter to win Ascend Practice of the Year. Go to ascendevent.com and enter for your chance to win. What do you get if you win Practice of the Year? Stick around to the middle of this episode where I chat with Heidi Chenanga, president of WebPT, to give you an idea of what being the Ascend Practice of the Year really means and what you get. I promise you, it's some cool stuff. Spoiler alert, one of the prizes is an UpDoc Media digital marketing package, 1 month free, $1,500 face value. Head over to ascendevent.com and enter for your chance to be Practice of the Year. Now, on to Therapy Insiders. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. Dr. Gene Schirachabrad here with Dr. Joe Palmer, Dr. Erson Religioso. Gentlemen, how's it going?
Gene, doing well.
I'm doing well. You're still with us, Joe.
Joe, did you have a baby yet?
No baby yet. No signs of baby.
Well, I'm sure there's signs. I'm sure there's plenty of signs.
Well, I mean, signs. No signs of baby coming into this world yet.
So. Well, that's exciting. Erson, is your kid sleeping yet?
Oh man, you're gonna actually make me say this live.
Well, it's not live; it's recorded. So,
well, if he doesn't sleep well tonight, Gene, I am going to call you incessantly. You better turn off your phone.
Never.
I just got done teaching a course in Tennessee, and it was the first time I was gone. And my wife had all the kids, because last time I taught in Pittsburgh, I brought the four girls with me. So, you know, I left the hardest one with my wife, but at least she didn't have to take care of all the other ones and prepare the meals and everything. She had lots of family over and everything. And I think he basically, the first night he woke up at 5, and the second night he woke up once at like 3:30, and then again maybe at like at 6 or something. So he did really, really well. I mean, and she was still exhausted, obviously, by the end of the night, but she was definitely able to do it, and you know, get, like I said, family and friends over. So yeah, he's doing well. I'm knocking on wood now, because Nicole will kill me for saying that he's actually doing pretty well.
You're on record with the wood knocking, so you're off the hook.
All right,
but it's tough. It's tough in the summertime, right? When if you don't get a lot of sleep and you have kids that want to play outside and you have things to do. It's a hard balance. But you got to find that balance if you want to survive, if you don't want your significant other to strangle you.
For us, it's easier in the summertime because it's like if we're tired, we just tell the kids to play outside.
Just go outside with the chickens.
Yeah, just go outside, try to catch a chicken. I'll tell you what, Chris Johnson is right. That is some crazy agility training, trying to catch those things. We had to clip their wings. They were escaping the coop.
I'm pretty sure Rocky proved that many years ago, Urson.
I just thought it was hyperbole.
How dare you say that about Rocky? How dare you call him that?
I really think just the chicken part, though, you know, him taking all those punches was totally real.
And drinking raw eggs.
Oh, yeah, my brother totally used to do that in the 80s just because of Rocky.
Absolutely.
I could never
cause a salmonella outbreak.
Yeah.
Oh, that Rocky. But you know what else summertime brings around, Urson? It brings around the end of school and graduation and the opening of doors of young professionals. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means when those doors open up, Urson and Joe?
It means you get a lot of resumes.
Jobs? Does it mean jobs?
It means jobs, it means resumes, and it means the start of new careers. New journeys are about to begin, and it's very exciting, and it's rejuvenating for those of us that have been in the field for a while to see this excitement of students before they get their first student loan bill. Sorry for that. But before all that happens, they have this excitement. So I do a mentorship group and we talk about a bunch of stuff. So I thought it'd be a cool episode for three of us to get together and just talk about some of the lessons we've got, some of the best advice we've gotten when we were starting out, stuff that we've learned, and kind of dole out some of our advice for the fresh PTs and the new grads and the new TB grads that are finishing up waiting to take boards, and see if we can kind of share some of our knowledge and ups and downs and things that we learned. What do you guys think?
Sounds great.
I'm in. Let's do it.
All right. Well, I think it's only fair since Urson is our elderly statesman and usually does introductions. It's only fair that he starts.
Oh, today our guest is advice. Right? Advice or advice?
Advice.
Advice. Well,
take it or leave it. But he's here.
He is here. If you don't like our guest advice, please turn this podcast off because it's going to be a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. From some from fresher PTs and some not so fresh PT.
Exactly. So what do you think, Urson? Some of the stuff that you've gotten over the years, anything that kind of rings true and you hold on to year after year?
Well, I think, there's a lot of things in terms of what I would tell a fresh PT to do. We talk about a lot, and mentorship is definitely one, and a lot of those who are listening are probably already in your mentorship group, so they're already definitely ahead of the game. But I think not only mentorship, but looking for great continuing education courses, and also local groups and online groups that just kind of, you know, help you further your education. I mean, everyone always wants to kind of learn either great techniques or the latest techniques or assessments, but even if you take amazing courses taught by great instructors with live patients, you still have to have people to bounce them off of. And I think in this day and age, it's easy to be stuck in a clinic. Like my first job, I was hired to be the director for my first PT job. I didn't even realize it. I applied for the job. I just had an ATC working with me and a secretary, and I had no one to bounce stuff off of. Cause ATC, he just did like eSTIM and ultrasound and everyone. And he's like, don't look at me for the spine, you know? So I would have killed to have even an online group to bounce stuff off of. And, you know, if you're already not involved in social media or Facebook groups or Gene's mentorship group, I think it's a great thing to do because you're definitely going to get stuck. And there's going to be a lot of patients who are textbook, and there's going to be a lot of patients who are scratching your head. but it's not something, it's something that you should both seek help for, but it's also something that I think you shouldn't lose sleep over. And that is, I don't know if you guys are at that point in your career, but you know, if you have a couple really difficult patients, do you still lose sleep over it or not?
Erson, I never lose sleep. I think Joe can attest to, if I'm asleep, I'm not waking up.
Gene's like, well, you're not getting better. It's obviously your fault, not mine.
Exactly. It's right? It's all you. This is a patient experience. It's patient first, Erson. It's always about the patient. So it's always the patient's fault.
Right. Yes. Okay. Then my advice is to be more like Gene.
it's definitely frustrating. I know when patients don't get better, especially if there's not a clear understanding of why it's happening or not happening, and if the patient is projecting a lot on you, that it's your fault that you did this to them, you did that. I think the biggest thing is to take a step back and try to remove that emotional part as quickly as possible, to diffuse that situation instead of feeding the fire of emotion, because there's no logic within emotion, and it's going to quickly spiral away. And it's kind of that psychology of communication and conversation, is understanding where that person is coming from. And some of that comes down to empathy. And I think empathy is, and I might get beat down for this, but I think empathy is a bit overrated. I think to feel like somebody else feels, I think is nearly impossible. And I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, I have a hard enough time figuring out my own feelings. So to figure out somebody else's feeling is incredibly tough. And I think the only people I truly fully empathize with is my kids. And I think that only happens, like, if my son gets hurt doing something, I can really feel that. I can feel that pain and what he's feeling. With other people, it's perception of what they're feeling. It's doing my best to kind of put myself in their emotional position. So to me, I think it's a lot easier, kind of what Dan Pink talks about, is to attune to somebody else, to think like they think versus try to feel like they feel. So that's usually the way I try to deal with that situation, and it works out well for me.
Right. You know, that you said that, I think it's a point that when we have Larry Benz back on, you know how he said you can teach empathy and learn empathy. And I always thought to myself, before I even heard about that, you know, if you're not empathetic, are you learning to be empathetic, or are you just learning a set of behaviors and responses to make it seem like you are?
That's a great question. I think it's really tough, and it depends on the person. But I think the more you are in tune with the how certain reactions or emotions manifest themselves in different people, I think you'll have a strategy built up in how to deal with those, a pattern of recognition for emotions. And I think good clinicians do that. And I think just good communicators do that. And to me, that's just as good if you can have a connection pretty quickly and be on the same wavelength as the person that you're let's say, connecting with emotionally.
Absolutely. Let's talk about also, instead of just like the advice about, because people ask about Con Ed, what courses should I take, what books should I read? Let's talk about things that they should do just even for the job interview, you know, because that's pretty stressful. I always thought that was stressful the first couple interviews I went on.
Yeah, that's a great point, Erson. So, Joe, what do you think? Like, if a new grad's coming at you, what is that interview process is like, and what do you want to hear from new grads during that interview?
So I think that as an employer, you're looking for a few main things in that interview. You want somebody that is passionate about their profession, about helping people, about becoming part of your organization. You want somebody that is a go-getter, and so in the interview, that's that candidate's time to display things that they've done and been able to accomplish, and really allow the employer to see that they can get things done. You know, they can set goals and they can achieve them. I want somebody that has a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan. And I'm okay with them having some ambiguity in that plan, but I want them to have thought about it. I don't want them to come in and say, I'm going to figure it out in my first year. I want them to have seriously contemplated what they want, because that's a motivated individual, and that is an individual that as long as our plans align, that we can help to achieve their goals. If they're achieving their goals, they're going to be happier. They're going to work better as a better part of your team. And I think that in the end, that makes a better product for your patients. And so those are kind of really the big things. I think that all the actual clinical things, if you have somebody that as long as their philosophy, their overall philosophy is in line with yours, and all the specifics, you should be able to teach, you should be able to mentor, you should be able to get them to learn. As long as you're in the same ballpark with treatment philosophy, then you should be okay. So it's really it's your time as a student to show the employer that you are bringing those things to the table, and that you are truly excited about that opportunity with that company.
What about financial ballpark? So let's say everybody syncs up in terms of vision and what they want to accomplish in their career, and they have all that stuff. What's a typical range for new grads, and what's the etiquette if they want to propose a different number, if they want to negotiate with for that initial term sheet? And do you recommend or do you recommend them stay away from negotiating in an initial offer?
I think that to some extent, if you've got a couple offers on the table, and the company that you want to work for comes in with a lower number, then I think the question to them is, is this negotiable, right? Because you need to ask them and say, hey, I do have some other offers on the table. Is this number a negotiable number? Is this your final number? Is there a structure behind this number? Because what the employee may not understand is that you may have a whole salary structure built on what an entry level PT comes into your company and makes at that point in time. Okay, so if you've recently hired other PTs, as an owner, we don't like to and we don't jump somebody like that. And if we really were going to hire somebody at a higher level than somebody we recently hired, we would probably bump both of their salaries. You understand that there's a salary structure in place at places that sometimes it's not negotiable. And in that case, save yourself the time. Ask that question first.
Right. So you have a system in place, and you wouldn't be off put. I guess that's the big question. If a student or a new grad comes to you and says, look, I really appreciate this. Give me just a general range of new grad salaries. It doesn't have to be exactly what you usually offer, but a range.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's going to be very regional, right? So, I mean,
right. It's more in Maryland, so East Coast, obviously.
But outpatient orthopedics in our area, I think a new grad is coming out looking at 63 to 66, you know, 67, something like that.
Okay, so mid to upper 60s with 401k, benefits package.
Yeah, with all of that stuff.
PT, all that stuff. If you want more specifics, we have an entire pay scale breakdown for physical therapy on UpDoc Media. Just go to our blog page and search for pay. Ben Fung broke all that down. So they come, let's say the offer is 63 and they come to you and say, hey, look, I really want to work here. This is a great gig. This is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to bring value. Like, what do they have to say? What do they have to provide to jump from 63 to 67 or 68, or let's say they want 70 and the structure isn't as stringent. Let's say 70 is that absolute maximum that you would go. What is a superstar level that you would say, I'd rather pay an extra $4,000 a year versus let them go?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty tough, starting off. I think that you better be bringing a lot of intangibles to the table. A lot of things that aren't clinical. Because let's face it, your clinical experience is nil at that point. I mean, you've done internships, but daily, grind. You're really just getting started. So I think that there better be a vision for how you're gonna use your skill set to not only bring other aspects to the table of practice. Maybe that's marketing, maybe it's social media, maybe there's other things that you can specialize in or teach. Maybe you have some presentations or maybe you do continuing education. You're involved with some teaching, some subjects. I don't know what that is for you, but you better be bringing something other than clinical, because really there isn't something clinical that I think could make that kind of a jump between new grads. I don't think there's that much difference between your relatively competent to great new grad from a clinical standpoint, just from a straight clinical standpoint. I would hire the competent new grad, and I would mentor them to where I wanted them to be. Does that make any sense?
And before we continue with more advice, let's take a minute and hear a word from our sponsor, Ascend Event. In the beginning of this podcast, I shared that Therapy Insiders is sponsored by Ascend Event, which is the ultimate business summit for rehab therapists. And to have the ultimate rehab summit, you have to have the ultimate award. So the Practice of the Year Award for Ascend, the winner gets a full page ad in Impact Magazine celebrating their practice as the winner, $1,500 cash, 2 free tickets to next year's Ascend conference, and 1 free month of UpDoc Media digital marketing. That's the face value of $1,500, and I promise you the overall value is a lot more than that. So it's an awesome award, and with any awesome award, there has to be a story behind it and the genesis of it. So who better to tell us that story than Dr. Heidi Janenga, president of WebPT. So Heidi, give us a little inside info on the Ascend Event Award.
Yeah, we wanted to, with Ascend, to really celebrate a practice that is just doing great things in the industry. There's a lot of businesses that are struggling right now because of the regulatory changes and just the environment that we're now in private practice. And I think it's really important to learn from your peers. And so what we wanted to do is create an award that was not only just based on an application, but based on metrics, based on, you know, people within the organization, and just people that are truly giving the best patient care and with the best outcomes that they possibly can. And so last year we celebrated with Atlantic Physical Therapy, Mike and Dave Manzo, who are just killing it out in the Northeast. Our two runners-up were Diane Cicada and Kimberly Piss, the owners of the Center of Hand and Physical Therapy, and also Justine Bernard, the owners of Elements Fitness and Wellness. A great bunch of folks who just have really done cool and innovative things to have a really healthy and growing practice.
Awesome. Thanks, Heidi. So do you have what it takes to be the Ascend Practice of the Year 2016? If you do, head over to ascendevent.com, enter all your information for a shot at $1,500 cash, full page ad in Impact Magazine, two free tickets to Ascend in 2017, and one free month of UpDoc Media Digital Marketing, $1,500 value. So, ascendevent.com. Let's see if you have what it takes. And now, back to Therapy Insiders.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. What do you think, Erson?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with Joe there. If a lot of new grads maybe say that, hey, you know, in school I took McKenzie A and B, or I took like these Maitland courses or Butler courses, and you know, really, like you guys have found out, right about in around 4 and 5 years out, you start to realize that you don't know as much as you thought you know, and you know. When I graduated with my MS and BS, I went right to Stanley Parris's, and I did my, like, before there even was a transitional DPT, I did a DPT program with a residency built in, and I learned all these MNIPS and MOBs and all kinds of assessments, and I just thought that was the best thing since sliced bread. And I remember sitting in on some directors' meetings, and I told all the other directors that if they had difficulty with patients, they should send them to me, and I barely even had a year's worth of experience because my residency was only part time, and you know, you just think you know a lot, but in the end, you don't have experience. And experience, really, as long as you learn from experience and you learn from your mistakes and you adapt, I mean, that's the reason why people value experience. And I think Joe's right. I mean, you could have the best clinicals in the world, and you could just kind of be like a unlikable person, or you could be a rather likable person with just average clinicals or just average background, and you maybe didn't even do a lot of ortho. But if you're malleable and you have drive, you know, a simple study basically showed that most of the people who get hired are the ones who are just the most likable during interviews. Like, you're just yourself, and you have drive rather than necessarily what's on your resume.
Humility is a big, big thing that I look for. I want somebody that's going to be humble and eager to learn. I mean, that's what you're talking about. Malleable.
Yeah, it's what I have now, but not then. It's amazing I got hired.
It's amazing I didn't get lynched after working for a few months. I think I told that story that I sat everyone down after a year and apologized for being a dick. So it's definitely it's a balance. Like, if there's people like me that come out to that interview, Joe, if like I'm gung ho and I'm confident, borderline cocky, borderline narcissistic, kind of what we talk about is one of my big pet peeves is people say that they're passionate. Like, I don't give a shit. You tell me what you're passionate about. I want to see it. So what's that balance of, yeah, this guy or girl is really headstrong and gung ho, but they're also backing up a lot of that stuff. So do we give them a shot as long as it doesn't throw off the team chemistry, or is it just too much of a risk?
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends. It depends how intense or what the intensity level is when you come into that interview. If you're coming into the interview and you're like that, and then at the end, you know, you've talked through and you've pretty much just bragged on yourself the whole time, and then you're the last thing that you say is, well that's not going to be enough money for me. We need to negotiate that number. I mean, there are a lot of red flags in that interview process that may keep you from getting an offer anyway. You know, you're not. It's a cumulative thing, and just like when you're treating, you get enough yellow flags, they start turning into red flags for you.
Yeah, what if the kind of the gung-ho or the push is not necessarily the bottom line salary number? What if it's, like in my case, it was, look, I'm working towards ownership, and it's going to happen one way or another. It's going to be either with this company or eventually I'm going to go off on my own. I'm going to give you X amount of years. I don't know how long that is. Here's my plan, right? We just talked about 1 year, 3 year, 5 years. After 5 years, within a 5 year to 7 year stretch, I want to be a business owner. And let's say, look, I'll take the 65. Is there potential for us to do something? Is that in your plans? In the meantime, I would like to really invest in my education. Can we put, let's say, instead of taking 67 or 68 from another company, can we put in X amount of money into continuing ed if continuing ed is less than that? How about something like that?
Right. That's advice I always give to new grads as well. Don't be so hung up on the difference between 65 and 68, because after taxes, it's not a whole lot, you know, for a biweekly paycheck. Every time I always got bumped up, even $5,000 that I finally asked for after like X number of years, I was like, man, it's not as big of a difference as you think, you know?
No, not at all.
Actually one of the biggest pieces I tell new grads as well. Like, be shocked for how much taxes are taken out of your first paycheck.
Yeah, like get a good CPA, figure out what you need to live on, and break that number down into biweekly or whatever payment structure you have. Figure out exactly what that number is going to be, because kind of gross salary is a shocking thing if you haven't had taxes taken out, because that sucks. That's like second behind student loan payments.
Yeah, but there are negotiables, you know, and I think that Con Ed is negotiable. Time off is definitely a negotiable. And I think there are other things that you think, you know, I actually had it so that I could cash in my time off. And, you know, when I was like a single guy and I didn't have like a bajillion kids, I would cash in my vacation and not take it in December and just buy myself a big birthday present or more video games or something. Yeah.
Living the life.
There's always negotiables. It's not necessarily always salary. It's even if everyone seems to think that salary is the biggest.
By the way,
one.
Thank you for admitting you have a bajillion kids.
What's
Thanks
that?
Thanks for admitting you have a bajillion kids.
Well, five bajillion, you know.
Nope.
Same thing to some
nope.
people.
Confirmed.
Most people, I should say.
Yeah, I think those things, I think that's a good way to negotiate some things that you'd like without sounding like
a pompous dick. Yeah,
you're hung up on a couple grand, because it is less, it's less important once you see the big picture. I think that you can certainly negotiate continuing education. There's always room for that. There's always room for, at least in a good organization, I think that they should be working in into your mentorship plan, a plan for you to achieve your goals, and if your goals include advanced certification, well, maybe you start working on how that's going to get paid for, and what the commitment is going to be, what percentage the company will contribute. All those kind of things are good topics to discuss, so that you can make a well-rounded decision when you're when you have to make that call.
Yeah, and to me, just having a increased budget or no budget or a not a established budget is a red flag for continuing ed for me, because I feel like if a clinic isn't invested in its employees, its PTs growth, that's a very big problem, because that's huge ROI. I mean, yes, you're spending money as a company, but is that business expense tax deductible, Joe? Continuing ed budgets?
So you have that, and it's on that,
it's incredible that companies don't value their employees' growth. I mean, yes, continuing ed is expensive, high quality ones, or at least perception of it is even more so. But it's immediate effect of your team and therefore the outcomes of your clinic. And if as an employer doesn't offer that or is not even willing to budge or negotiate that, to me that's a big, big red flag.
Yeah, I would be wary of a clinic that says we don't really have a budget, but you know, you can just submit and we'll approve it or not. I mean, there should definitely be a budget, and hopefully it's at least enough for two courses a year. Because what I mean, courses keep on getting more expensive. I mean, you know, some the dry needling courses out there are like $1,500-$1,700, and you know, that might be even more than you would actually be allotted. But I think another thing you could ask for is maybe they don't have a budget for you for every single one of their employees to travel, but do they bring in quality courses just in-house, you know, several times a year? Because a lot of employers are starting to do that, especially larger groups like the one that just hosted me, the Nashville Star PT. They just bring in like two or three great clinicians where I think once a quarter they just poll all their employees, hey, what course do you want? And then they reach out to an instructor or a group and they bring them in. And that's another thing. I mean, you might want to work for a group that just
or eclectic offers approach.
You know, Maitland cert or McKenzie cert as part of it.
There we go. All right, guys, how about we finish out? I think that's been a gold mine so far of advice. And obviously there's a ton more. We can make this an entire podcast series. But let's finish out with one nugget of advice that you want the new grads, upcoming new grads, or even fresh PTs and established PTs and healthcare professionals to know.
I know, I'm thinking. It's I'm thinking of something poignant. I was hoping that Joe or you would go.
Yeah, I thought that's what we just did, didn't we?
we gave a few, this is like the closing.
Yeah. No. Everything I said before was bullshit. All
that
right?
Was warm up. That was warm up to this.
Fast forward to 32 minutes in and listen now.
Come on, there's got to be more. Something you're holding on to that you want to just let it out into the world.
Oh, did we already say be humble? Be humble, learn a lot, find a mentor or mentors, hang out with like-minded people, and don't listen to the naysayers. I mean, if someone tells you you shouldn't open up your own practice after X number of years, or you should just never do it, the area is too saturated. You can do it if you have the right support. I think it's very difficult to do it on your own. And I think what Joe said was right. I mean, they asked me what I plan on doing in 5 years. I said own my own business, and it took me 10 years. And I was very happy that I eventually did. But, you know, I didn't have the resources that I think you guys do now. There's just so – if you're listening to this podcast, I mean, UpDoc Media is a great resource. And there's a ton of Facebook groups out there and blogs that you can learn from. There's so many free resources, you know, and at least get your clinic to pay for MedBridge. I mean, that's an awesome online resource. So I don't know. That's a lot of advice.
That is a lot of advice. We'll take it, though. Joe?
Okay.
I'm going to go with clinically, all right? When you start seeing your patients and you're in it every day, I think that – you need to consistently be present with your patient 100%, and you need to check whatever's going on, kind of at the door. You can't let things that may be happening, you know, in your life affect your work environment. You can't bring baggage into work. I think you need to focus with your patients, and you need to make real connections with them. And I think that a lot of people just coming out of school are very focused on the clinical aspects of physical therapy. They've learned all these techniques. They've learned spend as much energy and effort getting to know and building that relationship with your patient as you are in working on the clinical side. Because I do believe that building that rapport and really listening is just as important as how good of a PT you are in the overall experience and the overall outcomes that people get.
Absolutely. I think just to build upon that, I remember a quote that an employer once told me, someone who was always trying to recruit me to move all the way down to Austin, Texas. He said, I would always tell my new employees, be interested, not interesting. And I think that that sums up a lot of what you said.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Absolutely. And to kind of actually a combination of some of the stuff that you both said, to me, it's, don't underestimate the power, effectiveness, and necessity of soft skills, the communication, the psychology, the relationships. You know, build relationships, not just do techniques and not just do exercises and not just do kind of silos of care within the clinic. It's get to know the person, understand the whole biopsychosocial of it, which is important, obviously, but really process everything that's going on with the person. And then, like Joe said, you have to be fully present for that to happen. So I think that's important. And the other aspect is absolutely 100% mentorship. And to me, it's a bit of a disclaimer, obviously, that Jeff Moore and I do a digital mentorship group called PT Masterminds. And it's grown like crazy because we break it down into business, which I cover, and clinical, which Jeff covers. And it's a combination of things that is real life that we think they need to know and that they can use instantly, and things that you learn in school. So we try to give real life, but we base it on kind of raw, genuine relationships. And that's what mentorship has to be. It has to be an honest back and forth relationship that needs to be very well established before you start, because it's tough whether you're a new grad, whether you're 10, 15 years out, if you don't have somebody constantly pushing you, constantly there to support you and there for growth. And that's what mentorship is about. And it goes both ways. So you have to kind of vet that relationship early on. And that term, unfortunately, gets watered down and thrown around a lot, way too much. And don't talk yourself into something because of the potential of it getting better. It won't. If you have to tell yourself, well, after time, it might get better. Or if this happens or if that happens, it won't. It absolutely will not. If your gut is telling you this is wrong, it's wrong. So listen to your gut. So those are my things. Guys, I think that's a pretty thorough advice guest interview. What do you think?
Yeah, I think advice did really well. We should have him back.
I agree. I think it turned out pretty well. So I'm excited for all the new grads, upcoming grads, fresh PTs, even if you've been practicing a couple of years. Hopefully you can take some of this advice and use it. And if you're getting started, hopefully you can at least get started or avoid some potentially bad situations. And if you enjoyed it, let us know. Tweet at us at Therapy Insiders, at the OMPT, at Joe DPT. Let us know what you thought. Shoot us an email, all that good stuff at UpDocMedia. So go to UpDocMedia.com. Shoot us an email. Love to hear about it. Guys, any other closing thoughts?
Congratulations, new grads and fresh PTs. Even if you're not at the job that you wanted initially because of bills or family or maybe you just couldn't find it, that right job is waiting for you, even if you have to make it yourself.
I like it. Yeah, very, very good point, Arsene. It's if you spent $100,000 and went to school for most of your adult life and you're not happy doing what you're doing, stop and change it. There's no more rules that you have to stick around and be miserable for 12 months somewhere. All that old school thinking. If you are doing something that you're not happy with, you will burn out and you will waste that time anyway. Do yourself a favor. Find a place, find a job, find a career that you enjoy. You genuinely look forward to getting up in the morning and doing it. That's why you went to school. That's why you sacrificed what you sacrificed. Go out and enjoy your career.
Mic drop.
Boom.